Hello and welcome back to Power Suit Podcast, the 1980s branded podcast that's all about how we stay employable in times of change. This episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Simon Dixon and Apoorva Baxi, the co-founders of brand agency Dixon Baxi. The pair have both held many positions of executive creative director and then set up their own shop in 2002 with the mission of changing things for the better through creativity. They've got clients including Netflix, Eurosport and Samsung. I've also worked with people like Sony, and so basically I'm really interested to hear how you've ended up where you are, guys. And so a big welcome to Simon and Apoorva.
Hey, great to be here. Really excited to be part of this and maybe give you some insight into how we think and work.
Thank you. I realise with podcasting I'll need to like say who's who briefly.
Of course.
Simon, I'll ask you first. So you guys are now co-founders, which you've been doing for 16 years.
Yes.
If I know what year it is this year, then I've got that right.
It's 17 years in January.
Oh, wow.
So nearly 17 years. We started when we were 10.
Can you tell me, tell me where it all began. What was your first ever job, Simon?
I actually started my first design agency when I was at college. So I studied in a provincial college in York, and two or three of the guys on the course, we kind of had a sense that we weren't learning enough. So we felt we needed to do something else. So what we started to do is do freelance work in our final year. And then we figured that it was a nice entry into the industry. So we started doing record covers and things like that. And we got an offer to the back of a record store, and we used to trade work. So we'd do their work for the office space. And that got us in the game. And from that, we did like two or three years of almost like a disposable work. It was for the music industry. So we did a lot of churn, lots of little projects. And it allowed us, I suppose, to cut our teeth as designers and creatives. And at the time, I was probably 20 when I started. So I was too young and too stupid to realize that I shouldn't have a design agency. But that was the thing that kind of, I suppose, got me in the game. And it gave me a sense of independence that I could do what I wanted to do with my career.
That's really cool. That's much more of a glamorous answer than previous people I've spoken to. It's normally like straight out of uni into Boots and McDonald's and things like that.
Yeah, I did. When we started the agency, I did do three jobs around that.
Did you?
So I used to clean prison cells. I cleaned a bar, cleaned lots of other places, you know, banks and things like that. So I used to get up at five, I'd go clean places, and then I'd do the design work, and then I'd go clean places. And that gave me enough money to live until the business got going.
Oh, my God. I've also not had an answer like that before. Do you think do you think that's probably helped with your creative process?
It taught me hard work, that's for kickoff. What it did was, I was quite an independent person, I think, when I was young. I always knew I wanted to be creative, and I tried lots of things. So I tried illustration, photography, fine art, did a lot of different things. And I suddenly figured that graphic design was a nice way of blending all those things together. I studied pure graphic design, and I always had this sense that I wanted to do it my own way. And this was in the early 90s, so it was a time when creativity was really exciting. The 80s was, as we're talking about, in a sense, there'd been this really massive phase shift in British design, and some really amazing people like Vaughan Oliver and 8VO had done some fantastic things. And I thought, this is a really good time to try and do different work, things that was challenging and would push you. And I felt it was better to do that myself than go work somewhere and have to kind of work my way up.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Apoorva? How did you start out?
When I was 13, my first job was actually as a paperboy. I don't know, maybe that's common to a lot of people, but to Simon's point, actually, it did teach me to wake up early, work hard, earn a pound around, so by the end of the week, I could afford to buy something. And I did some sales assistant jobs. I worked at Hamleys, the toy store. Yeah, that was just really a stopgap in between college. I went to Middlesex University, and I studied foundation there. So that was kind of that formative period where we looked at illustration, ceramics, fashion, and all of those things. So that was a really great point in time to just really figure out what was interesting about design or creativity and so on. And to be honest, actually, that was something that I'd always been fascinated by. And Simon will have heard this many times, but one of the first things that I remember of feeling excited about storytelling or creativity was seeing a film called Tron when I was 10. And I didn't really understand what was going on in the film, but it was this this kind of glowing neon environment. I just felt that it was cool. And those things kind of live with me. When I was, at school, I would continually draw cars, specifically a Lotus Esprit Turbo. I don't know why, but I became known for that. And you know, I really enjoyed art at school at GCSE level. And then that followed through at A level. But I didn't really know it was a career. You know, I didn't know it was something you could do. And certainly my parents were aghast that maybe I would move into a direction that wasn't engineering or business or any of those things, into a space that maybe was a little bit tricky to get a job or have a career. But after foundation, I stayed on at Middlesex University and did a design degree, which was really exciting. But again, I guess going back to that sense of figuring out my own way, the whole course was very much about that. When I left, I had a lot of design studios that I was fascinated by. So I just hand-delivered CVs. I just went to see people. And that was really interesting because they didn't expect me to turn up. But a lot of times they were gracious enough to say, hey, come in, have a cup of tea, and let's just talk about design or look at work. So there was kind of a, I guess, an entrepreneurial spirit. But the idea of just meeting really interesting people was a part of that. And from that, I picked up two internships. I worked at a company called Michael Peters, which was really well known back in the day for, I guess, more corporate work. What it made me realize was that it wasn't for me. You know, it was more about annual reports and so on. I felt a need to be much more expressive. And then I did a stint at Saatchi & Saatchi as well, which was kind of a different angle. It was with graphic design, but it was about how do we communicate through advertising. And they were interesting points in time. So I was about 23 at this point. Really, it was about working in the real world, you know, being in the center of London and working in environments that were real. I think that was really exciting. But what it did was almost frame what I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. It was almost either a little bit too corporate, a little bit too slow. I didn't have entire ownership of the creative. So there was that need to make things. And this, I guess, brings me to how I met Simon. You know, my first job was at an agency in London that was doing some really exciting things. And Simon had moved to London to start this you know, kind of new office. And that's where we met. And I joined that company. And then we kind of embarked on this kind of massive growth period in terms of creativity.
And that was as Dixon Baxey, or is that like a previous version?
No, it's a previous company. Yeah, when I finished my first company, after 3 years, we realised when we were like 22, 23, we didn't actually know anything. So what I felt was, and the other guys felt, was we needed to go to London. So we needed to work somewhere or kind of experience London to get a better sense of it, because our agency was in York, so it was very provincial. And we had ambitions to, you know, work on the larger projects. So before I did that, we wound up the agency and I applied for a job, a very small agency in the north of England, thinking I'll work there for a few months while I go to London. And as it turned out, the two founders wanted to open a studio in London. And the work I did, because it was very creative and kind of pushing the envelope, and it was very music and entertainment orientated, we used that work to go to London because it worked really well for that type of audience, people like MTV, Sony, Sega, and those types of people. But I put my hand up and said, well, I'll go to London, which is what I did. And we opened the studio, and actually it was in Harrow, which isn't in London, it's, you know, the middle of nowhere. But we did manage to pick up some really interesting work. And what it did was it kind of accelerated us from being provincial designers into more national and international designers. And as Apoorva mentions, that's where I met him. So we did that for about 6 months. And what happened was we hired somebody as a new designer. But the following day or a couple of days later, a friend of mine said, oh, I've just met this guy called Apoorva. You should meet him. He's a really cool guy. So I met Apoorva and we just chatted for about 3 or 4 hours. And it wasn't really an interview. It was just we chatted about music and films and lots of cool things. And the next day we rang the person up we hired and said, we've made a mistake and we hired Apoorva.
Oh my God.
And then Apoorva and I sat next to each other for about a year and a half. And then I went to New York to open a new studio. So Apoorva replaced me. And then about a year and a half later, I went to San Francisco to open another studio and he replaced me in New York. And we ended up kind of bouncing around the world opening design studios for about 6-7 years and went from provincial to national to international. And the studio that we were running went from about 18 people to over 200 people. And we went from working on traditional graphics and branding. When we got to America, we moved into motion and like real branding, you know, like deep strategy and execution, much greater scale. So that was people like Microsoft and Nike and Levi's and much bigger companies. And in America is where I learned the skills that we apply now, basically, to our business.
That's really cool. So was it like directly off the back of starting those design studios that you decided to start your own one? What, so how did it come together?
Yeah, I mean, in essence, how it worked was we did that for about 7 or 8 years, and it was in the late 90s, so it was an amazing time to do that. And traveling the world, cutting your teeth, we've always been great believers in doing to learn. So I really like the idea of the process of creativity, the moment that you don't know what to do, the moment where there's a kind of virgin blank piece of paper, or you walk into a room and you have to figure things out. That's the most exciting part of it. So that kind of constant change and reinvention and trying to learn how to be a better creative was a great period. And expansive growth, growing really rapidly, means you learn quickly. Make tons of mistakes, don't get me wrong. We made some terrible mistakes as well as really good stuff. But I think we did some good work. What it meant was after a while, we had a kind of like a laundry list, a sense that we wanted to go back to something more personal and independent. So when you have a large agency, you get disconnected from the creativity and you're working through other people and you're removed from the process. And both Apoorv and I felt that wasn't what we wanted, because at this point, we're only 30. We're quite young. So I went to New York when I was 26, for example. So it was quite young. So I thought, I don't want to just suddenly become this guy who sat behind a desk. And we just had this list of the things we thought were valid and the things we didn't think were valid that we'd learned in the last 8 or 9 years. And we wrote this list of things we would do with the new agency and things we wouldn't do with the new agency. We shared the two lists and we said, it's time to start something new. So we started Dixon Baxi in 2001. And I was in London and Apoorv was in New York. He came back. And we left our jobs and we just started the next day with a new agency, basically.
Amazing. Was that thing I read about a manifesto, is that the same thing as this
Yeah,
list?
Basically, the list, the kind of mythical list, which we can't quite find, but it exists.
It's a real thing.
It is a real thing. And it is that manifesto. I think when we left, as Simon says, you know, I was in New York and as we were kind of plotting, you know, what the new company would be, we would just kind of continually talk daily and weekly to figure out, you know, what our point of view in the world was. And this list helped clarify that. And really, it was rooted in values. You know, we really wanted to be much closer to creativity, much closer to the clients, really focus on why we're doing what we're doing, that it has an effect and a value, but also has a beauty and a craft and a thought behind it. So all of those things started to build a way of working. And when we left the previous agency and started Dixon Baxi, they were the foundation of the company. And to be honest, they continue to this day. The company has changed over time, as it would do in 17 years, but really the fundamental truths behind it are still there.
A lot of the things were things like not bullshitting and being honest and believing in the things that you believe in and not doing things that other people tell you you should do. So in a sense, in the least arrogant way, we wanted to be selfish, because being creative is a very personal thing. But if you're a commercial artist, which is what we are basically, we're working for somebody else, you have to have a relationship with other collaborators, your client, and then the end user, the person you're designing for. And we've always designed for real people all over the world. So we have a statistic, which is at any given time, about 2 billion people interact with design systems and brands we've created with, which is a massive responsibility. And I like the idea that you design for real people in the real world. And if you put bullshit between you and that connection with the end user, the work suffers. If you buy into the hype of being creative and believe your own hype, you suffer. So you need to be more humble. You need to learn. You need to change. You need to be restless and adapt as a creative person so that you don't plateau. You don't atrophy as a creative. You've got to keep learning. So our mantras and our manifestos have always been about, you know, developing as creative individuals in a team, you know, being as diverse as possible and open to learning, being respectful of the end user of what we create, and try and make things that have value, creative value that is, you know, delightful and sparkling and exciting, but also super effective, because there's no point in designing something if it doesn't work. So we're very pragmatic on one side, but very creatively ambitious on another. And I think that blend is something that both ourselves as people who run the agency, the people who work there, but our clients and hopefully end users all benefit from.
So would you say that those values that you guys put together, if you also talk about sort of being creatively restless and always changing,
yeah,
would you say that you have been quite loyal to the sort of original values?
The core things, yeah. The core things for sure, because they define who you are as a person. But of course, if you have a team of people, they add to that experience. So Apoorv and I have always believed Dixon Baxi is the space between us. So it's not Dixon and Baxi. It's Dixon Baxi as an entity. And of course, as we've grown, that space between us is shared with other people. So the things we learn off our team, the people who bring things into the studio, should expand those value sets. About half the team is international. It's very diverse. About 80% of the work we do is international. So we see ourselves as a global company rather than a British company, though we love Britain, obviously. So it means you have to learn as a person. So if you're running a studio, what you don't want is lots of a replication of who you are, a replication of what you do. What you want is to create the space for other people to be creative and achieve their ambitions and validate themselves through their creativity. And you should get a vicarious thrill through that as well.
Mm-hmm. And then Apoorva, can you tell me a bit more about the future plans that you've got for the agency?
Well, look, it's been a really exciting time. I mean, 17 years is, there's been a really great journey. I think that the future for us is to really focus on a number of things. You know, we just moved into our new space and we bought that space. And that's really important for us. We've talked about this for some time. We've always had the ambition of creating a spiritual home for the team. So one of the big things is just to focus on that and build that environment. You know, owning an agency is really about creating a safe and absolutely creative space for the team. So it's really important for us to invest in that. So I think, you know, that's going to be a big part of our growth, a big part of creating the space for new ideas and innovation and so on. And we talk about this term being creatively restless. I think the key for us is to stay agile. So if anything, the future means that we are constantly evolving and changing. We always talk about being forever in beta. You know, this idea that we don't stop. So as soon as we complete something, you know, we want to do something else and move on to the next thing. So there are kind of layers to that. I think from a creative point of view, the projects that we work on need to have greater effect. We want to make sure that they are not only creative, but have a deep thought behind them. So I think, you know, one aspect is to continue to grow that, certainly in the type of work that we do, the clients that we work with, but the effect that we have. And we're really lucky to work with people like some of the ones that you named, you know, Netflix and Fox and Samsung. And really, the responsibility there is great. So we want to make sure that our team feel part of that story and share in that. The other sides of the business, we have another business as well, which we might come on to later, but we have a film production company called Dixon Maxey Evans. There's another partner with us, Gareth Evans. And that's a big future for, I guess, as us as individuals, but as the company as a whole, is making feature films. And we've made our first one a few years ago. In fact, Simon directed it and co-wrote it, called Tiger Raid. And that was premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, which was hugely exciting and a massive achievement. And I think what that did was kind of cement a lot of things, you know, a lot of loves that we have, a love of film, a love of storytelling. And it was really a confluence of all our creative skills and you know, what's really exciting about the future is the next film. And Simon can kind of talk to you more about some of that. But it's a big part of the expression of what we do. So that's one avenue. And another will be other IP that we create, whether it's more books. We've actually just completed a new book. But not only that, it's other IP. So we're really interested in app development, creating digital products and things that our clients can benefit from, our team, but also, you know, building things that maybe a greater audience can get behind.
So would that be products of your own, like the book? Would it be products that sort of belong to Dixon Baxi rather than branded to?
That's right. I think, you know, there's a really important space to express things that we might not get the chance to do or test ideas. So the idea of innovation and looking ahead is really important to us. So that IP is something that is rooted in Dixon Baxi and all of the things that we care about. But it's also an avenue to express and explore different things, certainly to allow the team to express themselves, to do new things, to demonstrate things that maybe people don't know that we can do, and to, I guess, creatively challenge ourselves. That's probably the biggest thing. And to be honest, making a feature film is probably one of the biggest challenges you can undertake. I certainly don't know many brand agencies that have done that. And I think those things are the things that we find truly ambitious and really exciting. Mm.
I actually don't know much about the film production side of your business. So, like, I know that it exists, but yeah, Simon, can you tell me a bit more about sort of either how it came together or where you're at with it now?
Yeah, so as Apoorva mentioned, we have a third partner called Gareth Evans, and he used to be our executive producer, so helped facilitate making the commercial work that Dixon Baxter did. And his background's film. I've always been a massive fan of cinema and all of its forms. So Paul was into film. So we were chatting and saying, we should try this. We should just have a go. And we talked about it loosely for a while. And then we said, well, why don't we actually do it? Because no one's going to give us money to make a feature film. So we did. So we put some money aside. Gareth is the producer, so he heads up that side of things. And we looked at lots of different ways of making scripts, and we optioned books and all sorts of different things. We had 50 different ideas, like in a raw form in the studio, and we selected lots of things. And then we found a play, an Irish play, which had was unproduced. We turned that into a script, raised the money in 6 months, went to Jordan to film it because it was set in Iraq, edit it, made it all in a year, and then entered it into festivals. We got into Tribeca and Edinburgh Film Festival, so that takes a year, did that. And it basically cut our teeth. And what everyone said to us was when we said we're going to make films, the professionals said, what films have you made? And we said, we haven't made. And they said, come back when you've made one. Everybody who's not a professional kind of goes, well, that's kind of cool, but doesn't take you seriously, because how many people talk about making films or writing that first great novel? Everybody does. But we're great believers in doing, as I said earlier, so I'd rather make something, try and make something, fail doing it, rather than be the guy sat in Starbucks chatting about his awesome script. But we got through that part of it, and what it meant was we've proved we can do it, so we're in the game. So we're currently working on our second film, which is called Blood Animus. It's a psychological thriller which is set in China. The idea is to try and shoot that at the end of next year, and we've just finished a draft of the script, which will be going out to talent, actors, financiers and other co-producers actually next week. So the idea is to raise the money over the next 9 months, get into pre-production, go film it and do it again, but on a grander scale, basically. And it's you know, it's something that runs in parallel to Dixon Baxter. And what it is it's an artifact of doing what you love because you can, or doing what you love because you want to. And I think it's important as you develop creatively to express yourself in many different ways. So obviously we do a lot of things commercially, but the ability to do things non-commercially is really important. And I think Apoorva spoke to it, where we've got a studio now, which is permanent. It's our home. It's safe, and we can do things and try things. So, you know, we might open a restaurant. We might open a studio in New York. I don't know. But what's nice is we can decide. We have the ability, because we're independent, to sit down with ourselves and the team and say, what would you like to achieve? And, you know, the baseline is awesome work and awesome to us. So it's about being proud of the work, not no one else's metric. You know, winning an awards and things like that are important. My belief is if you're proud of the work, that's what defines you. So if we're proud of the work, then it makes us happy. And that's what's guided us for 17 years.
That must be really freeing, not just for you guys, but like for everybody that works closely with you. Have that sort of permission to play. I think that's really important anywhere.
I think so. Our jobs are quite serious in some levels, because you have a great responsibility. If you're working with Samsung or you're working with Sony or somebody like that, it's an awesome responsibility because it's cool projects, and we only do large projects. We'd rather do fewer but larger projects that have greater effect. So, of course, you know, there's lots of machinations that comes with of being a creative person that works commercially. But you still are a creative person, so you've got to push the envelope a little bit, I think, and have some fun with it, really.
Yeah, I think what we try and do, obviously, we have the commercial responsibilities, but we try and, as much as possible, put play into making that work or experimentation. So, you know, we're always kind of challenging ourselves to say, well, how do we make this different? How do we make it? How do we explore things in a different way? So I think that is inherent in even the process of making commercial work. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to try new things, to bring some of the passions that the team care about into the work is really important. So as an example, you know, for the film, we managed to make some trips to China to immerse ourselves in that. That's really exciting. You know, we actually offer, and our team go away on Dixon Maxey weekends to kind of embed themselves in culture. It's just an opportunity to change the frame of reference. So play isn't simply just working at it. It's about how do we express ourselves? How do we soak up new influences? We're kind of in an environment where everyone sees everything immediately. And so there's a danger, and you can kind of see it, of a homogenization of things, where things start to all look the same. All our references are the same. So it's really important to kind of build new cultural references. And we're oftentimes trying to re-edit them in really exciting ways. So by working internationally, that's usually liberating, because what happens, it throws us into the mix with different cultures. You know, we can't export Shoreditch design to the world. We have to feel authentic. We have to create things that add value to an audience, maybe in South America or in the US or in Morocco, where we just did a news channel. And those things are really exciting. So I think, you know, to your point about expression and passion, I think those challenges that we face mean that you have to dig deep and find new ways of kind of capturing and expressing those.
Yeah. I'd like to move things on to your guys' advice for other people entering the industry and sort of how they can stand out when there's a lot of people being sort of, yeah, quite entrepreneurial. Mm. It is kind of hard to stand out at the moment. So I was wondering if you had advice for people entering the world of design or branding.
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing is being authentic to yourself. Because there's a lot of people who tell you a lot of things about how you should get into the industry and how you should work creatively. And the truth is, it's up to you. And I think you've got to find your voice, really, to center you around where you'd like to go with your career. So that could be trying lots of different things. I have a belief that there's no substitute for hard work. Anyone I've ever known who's successful in the industry has tried hard and tried again to do the thing they wanted to achieve, because you can't do anything unless you put the effort in. When we hire people, we look at the person first. And I think it's important, if you're yourself and you're authentic and you're true to what you believe in, people respect that and people connect to that, whether you're working for somebody or you're working independently. I think truth around what you believe is the way you would express yourself creatively is far more of a motivator. Like, I don't care what university someone went to. Often I won't even look at their work until I've met them, because if I meet somebody I like, you can do great things together. I can see great work, but if the person behind that work isn't interesting or is difficult to work with, you wouldn't do it. So we have a policy which is only hire awesome people. If you do, you'll create, or you have a better chance of creating awesome work. So that's how I look at it when I think about it. It's just, if you're independent of mind, you'll achieve the thing you want to achieve. Don't follow what other people tell you to do, including me.
Yeah, I think to add to that, it's a fire within that person. You know, it's a passion. I really get excited when I talk to kind of graduates that are really excited about what they do. It's you can't teach that. You know, it has to be inbuilt, and there has to be kind of an energy and a dynamo and a sense of, you know, I want to achieve something. I want to make something. I'm really excited about creativity. And those things, they feel contagious. You feel like that person then is going to be additive. You know, there's a massive opportunity to learn. And I think, you know, sometimes I guess graduates might feel that they've learned everything, but it's actually the start of their career. And, you know, one thing I'd say is that it takes time. It's not going to happen like tomorrow or next week or next month. And, you know, enjoy the journey, enjoy the effort of it. So I think a big part really is a sense of a passion, a sense of drive, a sense of you may not know where you're going, but you want to go somewhere. I think the other thing is the ability to learn and simply absorb stuff. Often we have interns, and the advice I give them is, you know, you're in the studio for a month. You have the opportunity to ask tons of questions, be super curious. You know, be really into the stuff, even if it is you're doing something that isn't entirely creative. I think you can be great in everything. So the ability to learn from every aspect of a role or an internship is usually important. And I think in terms of work, to echo what Simon says, you know, what is unique and individual? I think I would advise everyone not to look at Behance daily or Pinterest. Find that voice. And I think the things that feel original are the things that stand out. Not looking like everyone else and not everything being hyper perfect. It's about character and personality, and those things stand out.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I also feel like a good cover letter or way of getting people's attention is probably powerful.
You can't beat contacting people. It's like Pav said, he used to match around London with little letters.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm impressed. That's a really brave thing to do, just turn up at people's doors.
We've had loads of people from all over the world. We have an intern program where we have people for a month, and the best of those we give 3 months, and the best of those we hire. Oh. So 9 of our team currently came through that program. And the ones that are successful are the ones who made the effort to fly over from another country, or pestered us and emailed us, or linked into us and suggested an idea, or sent us something cool, but didn't rest then. They then did something else and asked if we got it, what do we think? And then in the interview and in the intern program, they, as the Pope said, they were curious and additive, you know. And as soon as you're additive, curious, and into what you do, it's infectious. Mm. And it's a two-way thing then, because the reason we do it is we learn off people. So there's nothing better than you meet somebody just out of college who doesn't have the same cynicism of someone of our age and the scar tissue of being in the industry for a long time. And it lights you up because you see something you've never seen before. And I think that's the bit that you're looking for, is that little bit of magic. And I think often there's a lot of excuses. People say it's hard. It's always been hard to be good. And the truth is, good kills great. So that you getting to a level is not enough. You've got to go further. So if you want to really, really enjoy what you do, do what you believe is important. And it doesn't matter what anyone else says. But you've got to keep doing it. That's what no one ever tells you, is everyone's always thinking about what they're going to be. The truth is, you're making what you're going to be in that moment. And if you're not doing it in that moment, you won't be the thing you're going to be anyway. If you're always looking down the path, you'll just fall off. You've got to be creating every day something that you're passionate about. And if you are, you look back in 10 years and go, that was worthwhile.
Mm. Yeah, there's nothing worse than somebody that's grumpy because they're resentful about being at the level that they are.
Exactly.
And so you kind of need to be, kind of enjoy it, even if it's a shit job, because it gets you to the right thing.
Slightly absurd, really, because things like titles and positions, it doesn't make any sense when it comes to creativity, because you're either creating or you're not.
Yeah.
All it is a difference in experience. So we have a sense that, obviously, if your name's on the door of a company, you have a certain gravitas you need to run a company. But the truth is, everyone's equal when it comes to creativity. Everyone can have an awesome idea.
Mm.
So enjoy what you're doing, because it's a real blessing to be able to be a creative person. There's lots of other things you could be that are really actually quite difficult to do. Creativity isn't difficult. It's challenging, but it's not difficult like other jobs. So you might as well enjoy it. Don't be kind of wishing your life away.
I think, just to add to that, sometimes context and why something is important, or what is the lesson in this, I see as our role in helping some of the younger guys really understand why they're doing something. There's kind of a higher purpose, and you're leading somewhere. So how they fit into our business, but also in the moment, why is that important? Why are we talking about some detail or bit of craft, or, you know, how to kern typography, or whatever it is? Even the way we put our work up on the wall matters. So if it's straight, if it's put up in an efficient way, all those things show that you care about that moment.
Yeah.
The way we treat clients, all of that is part of it. And I think, really, it's just a mindset and saying, actually, I can make this thing better.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to ask you guys about 30 years ago, in the sort of boom and bust of the 80s, we'd got ourselves out of the recession and then gone on to have big shoulder pads and big businesses, and everything was perfect again, right?
There's been a few recessions since then.
Yeah, but I do think there's like a parallel with, at the moment, this sort of boom and bust time, and I was wondering where you think things are going. I was going to ask you where you think things are 30 years from now, but I do actually think it's a really hard question. So you can just tell me a shorter period. Where do you think things are going?
30 years is absurd. It's like you said, I grew up in the 80s, so I remember the shoulder pads and
I think they're coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
They are. I've got lots of shoulder pads in my jacket.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, technology is going to change how people interact with each other. So one of the most profound things that's happened in the last decade is the way people socially interact globally. And also, people will have more free time. So I think it's going to come to this sense of, how do you validate yourself? How do you think about who you are as a person? How do you interact with people? And if you have more time, what do you do with that? I think it's always going to be difficult. There's always going to be boom and bust. thinking specifically about creativity, how do you fill your time creatively, and what are the things that intellectually that will get you involved in the world and not follow what other people tell you? There's a lot of divisiveness now because it's very easy for people to fall into a bubble and never experience anything outside their bubble. So I think there's a potential challenge for this generation and the next generation to crack those bubbles open and look at each other, enjoy each other's company and celebrate difference rather than magnify difference. And I think that's the thing that creativity could help with, because our job is to create brands and experience and communications that inspire and bring people together rather than separate them. And I think that is the thing I'd be looking for.
Yeah, completely. It will be what connects people.
Yeah.
Lastly, where can people find you guys?
Certainly at dixonbaxter.com, which is our website. You can find us at our Instagram and Twitter handle, which is at Dixon Baxter. You can pop to a studio, which is in Old Street, again, which you can find contact details on our website.
Thank you. Well, thank you for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Amazing.
For your time.
Thanks so much. It's been super enjoyable.
You've been listening to PowerSuit Podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in, and sign up to our newsletter for upcoming events and keep up to date with the podcast. You can also follow our social channels on @PowerSuit Social, and I'm Lauren Ingram. I'm on @PowerSuit Lauren. Thank you for listening.